You're listening to New Retirement Radio, brought to you by the team at Prout Financial Design.
Hello, I'm your host, Certified Financial Planner Dennis Prout.
I'm Heidi Cartwright, Financial Advisor and RICP.
Advisors associated with Prout Financial Design may be either 1. Registered representatives with and securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC, and investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, or 2. Solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor, and not affiliated with LPL Financial. Investment advice offered through Integrated Partners, a registered investment advisor. Integrated Partners and Prout Financial Design are separate entities from LPL Financial. Dennis Prout and Nathan Prout are solely investment advisor representatives of Integrated Partners and are not affiliated with LPL Financial. The opinions voiced in this show program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriately qualified professional before making a decision.
And WTCM News Talk 580, welcome aboard to New Retirement Radio, right here on WTCM with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, Michigan, starring Mr. Dennis Prout. Good morning, sir.
It's so good to be in here, Ron, on June 19th, 2025. Wow, rain and rain and more rain. Almost feels like spring, but we needed it, so we'll take it. It's all right, for most anyway. The garden is growing, just exploding. And we've got so much to talk about. But if you do have a question of a financial nature that we might be able to answer, our phone number, if you would, Ron, is?
You can phone it in or you can text it to us, 231 area code, call 947-0023, 947-0023.
Thank you, Ron. Well, it's great to be here. Thank you for listening. I'm only here for a short period here this morning, and I'm off to do other things, as I've been told I need to do and or want to do, writing including them. But Heidi suggested, and I was thinking the same thing, that we talk briefly about what happened this last Tuesday evening. It was an incredible time. The Long Long Foundation sponsors a group called Young Scholars. More than 400 students try out for this thing, and those who made it were about 15. 15 of the best musicians from around the world. Canada, wow. Thailand, apparently, Europe, China as well. So the Long Long Foundation gives them a three-year high-level instruction. It includes global performance opportunities, community outreach, and high-level instruction. And they were most recently down at the Cleveland Institute of Music. Well, anyway, they played for us locally at the Social District. And talk about up close and personal, we sat there around the piano that was right outside our office, the grand piano, picture this under a tent, a big tent. And it was so amazing to be that close and to be able to see them and their enthusiasm. It was incredible. And one quick example is they call it six hands on one. In essence, it's obviously three people playing. And let's see if we can...
Three people. One keyboard.
And you can hear some talking in the background as well, of course. Anyway. It was...
So how many people did you say were out there roughly?
Well, at our place, directly under our tent or in that area, was about 75 to 100, but there was also a really good crowd right in front of the Kauai building. Now, the Kauai piano studio helped sponsor it by providing the pianos to it. So there was a piano out in front of their business, as well as they'd also tuned one. Tim Dietland, local piano tuner, had tuned them specifically for them for this production. And it was unbelievable. We're hoping that it might happen again next year. The way it originally came out was Peter Payette's a personal friend, He's also the manager of IPR and asked me some months ago if we'd be willing to help sponsor this. So the Social District was a target for them. They thought it was a great idea to try to use the Social District more for a performance and to bring that kind of classical music up close and personal, which they did. And we had so many wonderful comments. So to the, each of you who showed up, we certainly appreciate it. And it was jet fuel for us just being involved in seeing that kind of performance. And those students, many of them 14, 15, 16 years old, just incredible talent. One of the comments from Patty Dietlin was, that version of Rachmaninoff was a virtuoso performance. So some amazing talent and skills put in front of us all, and we're grateful to have been a part of it. And so, next, moving into retirement. The first year retirement rule, which Nathan Prout is going to be discussing. And
are you exiting?
Make it a great day, everyone. Right. I am indeed. Ron, is leaving, take care,
the,
sir.
Dennis is leaving the building.
Have a great day, all.
All righty, we have played musical chairs. Beth Shire's now up at the big kids' table.
Yes.
As we... But she had to leave her cozy, comfy chair. Nathan is now in the middle. Welcome aboard, Nathan Prout.
Thank you, Ron. It's great to be here.
And Steady Eddie Heidi Cartwright is stage right.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here today. And, yeah, we really had a nice time on Tuesday. And I would just back up what Dennis said, the talent of those young people and the performance that they gave was really nice and very, you know, a special treat, actually, to be able to hear that. So we're going to turn the corner now and start talking about retirement radio topics. And Nathan is going to be first up today, and he's going to talk to us from an article that came to us from Kiplinger.
Yeah, that's right. So this is called The First Year of Retirement Rule. So while the first year of retirement generally, not always, but generally features fewer keg parties, football tailgates, and all-nighters, it shares one unique similarity with college. It's a new beginning. For thousands of new retirees every day, it's a time to spread their wings and discover or rediscover their sense of self. And, like college, if you take too much advantage of that freedom and neglect your responsibilities, it can hurt the whole experience. That was the case for one woman who retired with a large pension after 30 years at a major corporation. Within 6 months, she'd traveled extensively, gifted her adult children money, and was considering a second home, all without a financial plan. A surprise tax bill soon followed, and the risk of dropping out of retirement became very real. Fortunately, with a financial advisor's help, she got her finances back on track, allowing her to still enjoy her savings, but with greater intention. The first year of retirement is one of the most defining periods in a person's financial life, says Renee Collins, founder of Retire Ready Incorporated, and the helpful advisor of this story. It's not just about leaving the workforce. It's about creating a new identity, routine, and relationship with money. Research shows many are unprepared for this transition. In fact, the Financial Planning Association's 2025 Trends in Retirement Planning survey reports that just more than half of planners think their clients are financially prepared for retirement, and only 11% believe they are emotionally prepared. Retirement, of course, isn't a four-year stint, usually, if you retire right.
Only 11% of planners think their clients are emotionally prepared for retirement?
That's correct.
Really?
Yeah. It's a huge transition. Yeah. Especially after you've been saving your whole life, even the mind shift alone and seeing your accounts start to
go down
as you take those withdrawals is quite the shift. Yeah,
it is. And even your purpose. So your purpose was working and saving, and that's what you do and all these things. And then just that purpose is gone, and you do need to fill that void. And going into retirement, being mindful, are there certain hobbies that I wanted to do, like community outreach, different things like that? So really shifting your purpose after retirement is very important, and it's something to consider and really, think about, spend some time thinking about before you retire. So
that's right. The intentionality matters, of course.
Do they have professional counselors who help clients get ready emotionally for retirement? Seems like that would be a specialty area.
There are people out there who that is their profession. A lot of times they'll call that coaching. It comes into that
coaching
when you change from one segment of life to another. So,
Yeah. So as we were saying, of course, it isn't a four-year stint. It could span a third of your life. And while every year matters, experts say that the first may stand apart. It can trigger mistakes that snowball or set the stage for a fulfilling second act. After all, you don't want to live the same 30 times and call it a retirement. It's not Groundhog Day, right? So Scott Vandenberg, president of Century Management, puts it this way. In my experience, the first year of retirement sets the tone, both financially and emotionally. Old routines fall away and new habits, good or bad, start to take hold. This period is often referred to as the go-go years.
Not to be confused with the go-go's, right?
Is that it?
Dancers?
Yeah, okay.
That was a band.
It landed, Heidi. It's okay.
I tried.
When retirees are most likely to spend money on things like travel, recreation, and bucket list experiences. According to the 2024 Consumer Expenditure Survey, average annual spending for adults aged 65 to 74 is $65,149. By age 75, that figure drops by nearly 20% to $53,031. There's a risk of getting too comfortable with this early level of spending, potentially jeopardizing savings meant to last decades. But the opposite risk is also real. Scaling back too far and living in preservation mode, which could mean missing out on goals and experiences you could otherwise afford to enjoy. Research shows retirees are significantly more comfortable spending guaranteed income than non-guaranteed income.
So Nathan, maybe you could clear up, what is guaranteed income? What's not guaranteed income? Maybe give us some examples.
Yeah, so depending on your views and a lot of other things, Social Security would generally be thought of as guaranteed income.
Well, did you
see that? careful. but another source that can provide something like that is an annuity, whether a variable annuity or a fixed indexed annuity. Of course, that may not be right for you or your situation, and I'm sure I'm supposed to insert roughly 20 other disclosures here as well. But that's another source that people often rely on for guaranteed income. Pensions, those are fewer and farther in between, but they still exist out there in the wild. That would be another source of guaranteed income. So the first year also brings a physical and mental boost, the so-called honeymoon phase. But that boost may be shorter-lived than many expect. One study found that after just 2 years in retirement, that effect had largely disappeared as retirees adapted to their new reality. Some then reversed course, even returning to work within a year. The pandemic spurred 2.4 million excess retirements in 2020, according to a T. Rowe Price analysis of Federal Reserve data. But by March of 22, about 1.5 million retirees had already unretired.
That's more than half.
That is. Yeah. And it's not always for the money. A recent survey found that 1 in 8 older adults plans to return to work in 2025. While rising living costs topped the list of reasons, boredom ranked a close second. That's why the first year of retirement matters. It's when patterns take root and the habits you form financially, socially, and emotionally can greatly influence your retirement future.
And Nathan, this is one thing that we do when people first come on board with us. We do what's called a financial plan to try to help with some of these things that you're talking about, and look at that whole 30-year period instead of just the first couple of years.
Yeah, so many of those discussions too, when it shows the planning age of like 94 or 95, whatever it might come up with, people are like, oh, I'm not going to live that long. It's like, you're welcome to do what, you know, you want, but it's always more conservative, of course, to plan for a longer life. And, you know, statistically, obviously, and in reality, people are living longer and longer, which is why, you know, we're even seeing more and more articles about the trust fund running out earlier than expected on Social Security, or medical expenses continuing to increase, all those sorts of things. We won't be able to get through all of this article, but another point I thought was interesting was, so part of this is building a realistic, sustainable withdrawal strategy that replaces your paycheck and gives you clarity about what you can safely and comfortably spend. It also helps guard against a common danger in the early stage of retirement, and that is selling investments at a loss during a market downturn. Doing so can drain your portfolio and make recovery harder, potentially shortening how long your money lasts. And that gets into the sequence of returns risk. So, to reduce the risk, Vandenberg suggests holding 12 to 18 months of income in cash or low-risk investments. Essentially, this bucketing approach allows you to ride out market volatility without prematurely dipping into long-term investments. But for many retirees, managing money differently isn't the hardest adjustment. The bigger challenge? Rebuilding structure and purpose in daily life. So it's a really interesting article. I would encourage you to check it out. It's by Jacob Schroeder with Kiplinger.
So, Ron, I have a very exciting article today. It is, what is Step Up in Basis and how can it affect me? And actually, this article comes to us from Fidelity. And it has some interesting takes on cost basis. And what does that mean to you? What does that mean to someone who inherits an account? And how is cost basis handled? So this is for money that is not in an IRA or a Roth. This is what we call non-qualified assets, or assets that are not in a specific retirement type account.
What are they in?
It's just in regular money. It could be in a trust account. It could be an individual, a joint, and all different types of assets fall into this bucket. So it's a critical step for anyone building an estate plan or deciding how to distribute their assets. And there are many factors to balance when you're doing those processes, but this is just one that we're talking about. So basis adjustment is a tax provision that you'll want to pay special attention to as you're creating that estate plan. According to Section 1014 of the Internal Revenue Code, and that's where we find what the definition of step up in basis is, if a person holds property at death, it will receive a new basis equal to the fair market value of the property at the person's date of death. In the case of appreciated assets, the rule allows people who inherit the assets, such as stocks or real estate, without inheriting the tax burden that is triggered by capital gains. This is what is known as a step up in basis. Now, the Internal Revenue Service also grants the inheritor, or if you inherit this account, a long-term holding period for the asset, giving them access to the more favorable long-term capital gains tax rates as opposed to a short-term capital gains
tax. Can you give us an example. Mm-hmm. Like, fill in those definitions with, like, say, John inherited a house worth $100,000. You know, can you give us something like that?
Definitely.
Off the top of your head?
Yes. Okay. So say that your grandparent bought Ford stock back in when Ford started, whenever that was, back in 1900s, early
days
1900s,
of yore.
Right? All right. So maybe he bought it for $2 a share, yeah. And now it's worth $75 a share. I'm not really sure.
We wish.
Where
but,
are
yeah.
we?
Okay.
But
yeah.
So if you inherit that stock, if the grandfather, before he passed away, if he had sold that stock at $75 with a cost basis of $2, which was the purchase price, all that $73 would be taxed as a capital gain. But if it was still held in the account when he passed away and his grandchild inherited that account, their cost basis would move to whatever that stock was worth on the date of death.
Okay.
So what that could do, if it was maybe $75 when he died and he sells it at $75, he would have no capital gains. Or if it was $70, he would only have $5 in capital gains. So you can see there is, and when you multiply that by more and more assets, you can see there is a big benefit to that person who inherits by experiencing that capital gain. And a second benefit is the rate of tax. And that's what the item that I just mentioned. When you inherit the account, the IRS is going to say, we're going to consider that you've held this for a long time, even though you're the new owner of the account because you inherited it. So we are going to tax you at long-term capital gains. If you sold that as soon as you inherited it, they're going to charge you long-term capital gains. Short-term capital gains are what you get when you sell something you buy and sell it within 1 year.
Oh.
So that is taxed at your income tax rate, your whatever income tax bracket you're in. So it could be more beneficial. The long-term capital gain is very often less than what you have in your income tax rate, but it could be different, so you want to check that out. But that is where these two provisions allow the inheritor of somebody mm-hmm. to take advantage of this step-up in cost basis.
Right. So if you inherit something like that, in your example, you really should talk to a financial advisor because it's not just a bunch of money on your plate. You have all kinds of things to consider.
Exactly.
Okay.
And all assets have a cost basis. Basically, it's the purchase price. It's the difference between the cost basis and the sales price. That's called the capital gain. And capital gains, of course, are subject to tax. When an asset is inherited rather than sold or gifted, the cost basis typically gets stepped up to the fair market value of the property at the date of the individual's death. It is as if the asset was purchased at the price the investor received it, and no tax is owed for any of that previous gain in that asset that was in the grantor's lifetime. So the cost basis of an asset equals the purchase price of the assets, plus or minus any adjustments. So like in the case of real estate, the cost basis can increase if you make substantial improvements or renovations, or you know, if you redo your house and you do all those renovations, those can add to the cost basis and decrease that capital gain. Also, depreciation can come into play as well. For stocks, any fees or commissions you pay increase the cost basis, but investment management fees do not. So there is a distinction based on what type of account you hold that asset in. So when an inherited asset qualifies for a step-up in basis, the inheritors can adjust the cost basis to the current fair market value. Any capital gain that accrued between the original purchase date and the owner's date of death is recognized but not realized for the beneficiary. And this is where we're saying it's recognized that there was a gain, but the beneficiary is not going to have to pay that in capital gains tax. So if the executive of a person's estate files an estate tax return, they may be able to elect to use an alternate valuation date. So it's the date of death, but if you file the estate tax return, you are allowed to use a different valuation date if you need to, which is 6 months after the date of death, to value that asset. And the reason you may want to use this alternate date is because if the asset depreciates from the time of the owner's date of death. So looking at that, you can either use the date of death or 6 months after the date of death in that case. All right, so let's take a look at what assets are subject to a step-up in basis, because there's different kinds of assets. So we have real estate, we have individual stocks or bonds, mutual funds, art could be another thing, furnishings, collectibles, and some business interests can also be included in those assets that can take a step-up in basis. But there are, of course, a list of things that aren't going to make the grade. So those would include bank accounts, cash, CDs, 401k, and other employer-sponsored retirement plans, IRAs, pensions, annuities. So there is a list of assets that aren't eligible for this tax strategy. So capital gains are subject to two different federal tax tables depending on how long the asset was held before it was sold. And this goes back to the beginning of the conversation when I was using the example, the difference between short-term and long-term gains. So assets held for a year or less are classified as short-term capital gains and taxed at your federal income tax rate. But when you inherit an asset, however, you automatically qualify for long-term capital gain rates regardless of the owner's original holding period. And those rates are either 0, 15%, or 20% based on what your income is for that period. So if you are, and we'll talk about married filing jointly, if you make under $96,700, so that reportable income or that income that you pay taxes on, then there is no long-term capital gain tax there. For people making between that $96,700 and $600,050, that period, which is quite a span there, that's the 15% bracket.
Okay, that's a huge span. Mm-hmm. Why is it $600,000? $600,050, not just $600,000.
Well, that goes back to
Are you asking for the government to be logical with their laws, Ron?
Seems pretty on par, actually. Yeah.
So we're talking about capital, obviously capital gains here, but, you know, it's a lot to remember. But in addition to that, it's generally a lot friendlier than receiving or inheriting an IRA or a 401k. Because, yes, there is still that purchase cost, and you can see how much it appreciated. But you, as the inheritor, get to pay taxes on everything that comes out of that account at ordinary income brackets. And just to give you an idea, so the 20% bracket for capital gains, which Heidi didn't get into yet, but that's, of course, over the $600,050.
So, so at the 51st
dollar, right, yeah. And the 20% for, you know, married filing jointly for normal income is really anything. It's the 22% bracket. It's anything over $96,951. But that continues to go up. The most you can pay for taxes on long-term capital gains is 20%.
Right. And the highest income tax bracket is 37%. So
Plus a little more, so really it caps out at about 40% for anything over. So generally, again, the long-term capital gains rates are much friendlier than the income tax rate.
And that's why sometimes, you know, looking at that, you may want to pay the long-term capital gain, because it's going to be, if you hold that asset for more than a year, it's going to be less than if you hold it under a year.
That's correct, yeah.
All right. So moving right along, the article then starts talking about how to step up in basis work for married couples in community property states. So community property states are Arizona, California, Idaho, Louisiana, New Mexico, Nevada, Texas, Washington, and Wisconsin. And you'll notice that Michigan is not in that list. What we are considered is a common law state. So that's what Michigan is. And in common law states, a step up in cost basis works differently than it does in community property states. So for assets owned jointly between spouses, the basis step up only applies to the deceased spouse interest in the jointly owned property. So that sounds really confusing. But if you had a joint account, you're seen as each person owning 50%. So if one spouse passes away, only their half of the account is going to get the step up in basis and the other persons will not. So the asset holdings may not be fully in that category of a step up in basis. So this is all reasons, and these are all things that create opportunities for you to move your money out or move your money around, or look at the titling of the accounts. Do you want this in an individual account, or would it be better to have it in a joint account? There could be different tax ramifications based on how you title that account. So how can you use step up in basis in estate planning? Gifting is one. Gifting is gifts of appreciated stock or real estate while the owner is still living. These kinds of gifts typically retain the cost, the owner's cost basis. If instead the asset is transferred upon the owner's death, it gets a step up in basis, and the recipient is never taxed on the capital gain accrued during the original ownership period. So this is something we see when we talked with our clients about if you wanted to gift some stock, who is getting the stock? What is their income, so we know what tax bracket, how much capital gains they would experience if they sold it, or would it be better for this highly appreciated stock? Maybe we'd rather let that stay in the account and give something that has a higher purchase price or less capital gains, because that capital gains, if they sell it, the person that you gift it to, they'd be responsible for that tax. So just listening to this conversation or this article, you can see how easy it is to get into the weeds on this stuff. And that's why it's very important to look at these things, especially the larger your estate is, the more complex these decisions and the more ramifications. So talking to your financial advisor in conjunction with your tax advisor can really help you figure out, oh my gosh, with all these rules, what's going to work best for me? Because it can be a little confusing. But taking advantage of what this is usually considered a tax loophole, the step up in basis, taking advantage to make a better outcome for you and your family could be worth the time and effort to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So,
to summarize, consult your financial advisor.
Yes.
That's right. And our phone number, if you need one, is 231-947-3992. We would be, of course, happy to talk to you about any of this, even with all the things that go on when you inherit. There's a lot.
Planned. We had a question on the text line. I guess sometimes the advice is try to always have savings equal to a six-month savings on hand. Someone said, how are people supposed to save a year to a year and a half of savings? Any suggestions?
Yeah, I've found that it takes a while, so we'll start there.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, following a lot of the Dave Ramsey principles, too, is a great spot to start. So getting rid of your high interest debt and snowballing that, so that's out of the way. And if you're past that step where your debt or most of your debt is cleared off, then it's Well, even before that, too, you need to be aware of what you're spending. So I would suggest an app like You Need a Budget, or called YNAB, or Dave Ramsey has one, too. And letting that software then tracks what you're spending, and you can start assigning different categories and giving your money different jobs, essentially, is getting around there.
Set some goals. Skip a vacation 1 year, you know. Yep. Like you said, it would take a while.
And then just start setting aside like a 10% or 15% of whatever comes in the door by default, and then you'll start to see those savings grow, especially in a high yield savings account. So
well, yeah, once you do that, if you say this is my backup emergency fund, I've got 6 months worth of salary saved up, where's a good point to bury that, to put that?
Well, it's usually not a good spot to bury it.
You better leave a map.
Unless your yard pays some great interest. I don't know. But yeah, once you have that 6 months, or, you know, some people are more comfortable at 12 months or whatever it is, going into whether it's a high yield savings account, you could look at laddering some CDs for different maturity dates. So you have some becoming liquid at, you know, different stages, and it's not all just in a 12 or 18 month bucket. Or you could even look at treasury bills right now are still pretty competitive.
They didn't lower the rate yesterday.
They didn't lower the rate yesterday. Yes. Yeah. So.
All right. There it is. By the way, just FYI, Heidi, your example of your grandparents bought Ford stock for $2 way back when.
I was just making
it was worth $75 today. Yeah. It's worth, at this moment in time,
$10.43. Oh, yeah. Okay.
You should have used your grandparents bought Bitcoin.
I was trying to think of a Michigan company. Well, I'm sure sometime in the past it was worth more than $10.
I think it was.
We'll say 10 cents for that example.
Okay.
That,
well, just revise 70 down to 10, and you can still use the same concepts.
Same concept.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So we're just going to get back into that article that we opened with a little bit, because there was one other section that I wanted to highlight, and that was the importance of relationships as you head into retirement. So relationships also play an outsized role. Studies consistently show that loneliness contributes to both physical and mental decline. That's why they strongly urge retirees to stay connected, engage in group activities, even if you're an introvert. Retirees with strong social ties report far greater fulfillment. Routine can help too, Vandenberg advises. Retirement doesn't need to be tightly scheduled, but some rhythm prevents the days from simply blurring together. They say that some retirees can also expect an emotional adjustment. You may go through the stages of grief, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and finally, acceptance. So give yourself grace to work through these natural emotional cycles.
So you can accept that you actually have retired.
Yeah. You know, and of course, it doesn't need to be a sad thing, but it's a huge shift is really what they're getting at.
It is.
She recalls one client who reluctantly retired after a return to office mandate. Though he enjoyed some initial travel, he soon missed the social connections and sense of purpose work provided. Moving to a 55-plus community helped. After joining a softball league and building new friendships, he found renewed meaning and now encourages other new retirees to keep exploring until they find their own new place. And there may be more time to explore than many realize. For a 65-year-old couple today, there's a 50% chance that one partner will reach age 90. And a 20% chance one will each reach age 100.
What was the first one? The 90?
50%.
50%. Wow. Yeah. With rapid advances in healthcare and technology, the odds of living a healthy, active life late into old age are improving. Perhaps the better way to view retirement isn't in terms of years, but decades. As Bill Gates once said, most people overestimate what they can achieve in a year and underestimate what they can achieve in 10 years. Still, how you shape the first 12 months can shape the decades to come. And Beth, you also have some stats for us. Is that right?
I sure do. And I just want to say, like, when you're looking at retirement and you're going into it, not to forget that just the wealth of information that you've accumulated over your lifetime and different things like that, and just what an opportunity to mentor and mm-hmm. speak into somebody else and have that take up some of your time as well. So
hear, hear.
Lots of things to think about.
Pursue mm-hmm. those interests right. that you've had that you've never had time right. To do that. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so on to stats. May of this year, unemployment rate remained unchanged at just over 4%. Total non-farm payroll increased by almost 140,000, specifically in the healthcare, leisure and hospitality, and social assistance sectors, while jobs in the federal government continue to decline. And that's according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics. And then we have the healthcare sector was the only sector with a decline in May of this year, falling by 5.5%. The sectors with the best performance this year of May were technology with almost 10% increase, industrials with an 8.8% increase, and consumer discretionary with just over 8% gain. That's from Y charts. And according to recent Redfin data, there are 33.7% more sellers in the market than buyers, which is the largest margin that sellers outnumber buyers since 2013.
That's starting to be a flip, right?
Yeah, right.
From the inventory being so low to...
I think buyers are continuing to wait for mm-hmm. mortgage interest rates to decline.
Yeah, but people sitting on a
speaking of Dave Ramsey, as he says, marry the home, don't marry the rate. You can always refinance.
And a new study by the Pew Research Center found that nuclear power has seen an increase in support in recent years, while wind and solar power have become less popular among Americans. Similarly, Americans are more likely to buy hybrid vehicles compared to electric vehicles.
Hmm. All right, we have to wrap up. It's Prout Financial Design New Retirement Radio. Thanks again, Heidi Cartwright, Nathan Prout, and Beth Shire. Thank you very much.